Hello and welcome back to the Alliance podcast. I think both Ian and I are a bit surprised to be here. We were hoping to get signed by a more high-profile outfit after our first podcast, but that hasn't happened yet. So we are back talking about mental health again. Today, Ian and I are going to talk slightly more broadly than we did last time. Our first time out was focused very much on elite and professional sport, but of course we both have interests, both personal and professional, beyond that. Before we get into some of the issues I'd like to talk about today, including the role of the workplace, what we're doing here as an employer, and also some of the challenges in community mental health NHS services, I wonder if you might talk a bit about some of your personal kind of experiences, Ian. I know it's something you've spoken very openly about in the past. I think that's a very brave thing to do, but also I think it's a very important thing to do, to see successful, influential people within the sector talking honestly about issues around mental health if we're going to make any progress. So if I may just invite you to talk briefly about some of your personal experience, and then perhaps we'll move on to the discussion.
Yes, thank you very much. It's good to be back. My agent couldn't make it, which is why we're here today. From my own experience, dealing with athlete welfare, if it went from somebody saying to me, Ian, I've not been picked for a major games, then it came with trauma as well as a request for help. And I did a lot of that, particularly in the lead up to Rio, across any number of sports. I had the pressure of the duty of care review being undertaken by Baroness Tanny Gray Thompson, which I thought was of significant importance to the future of the British Athletes Commission. And in the back end of 2016, I got more and more involved in not just individual people seeking my help, but groups of athletes. And that led to some of the investigations that have been made public in the media, etc. The end result in May of last year was I realised finally that something was wrong with me. It took a prod from my son, Harry, who asked me whether he thought I was working too hard, and my answer was, I don't know how to relax anymore. And then the following week, the Braid household welcomed Fred the dog. And when Fred arrived, the house was just absolutely joyous. It was giddy with excitement. And I felt absolutely none of it. And I felt no empathy with this dog that had just created more chaos in my house by arriving in Chateau Braid. I was asked to fill in a personal health questionnaire by the medical profession. I scored 22 out of 27. And I was asked to fill in a general anxiety disorder questionnaire, and I scored 21 out of 22. I reflect back that I was very poorly. It was all situational. It was all due to the pressure of my job and the loneliness of my role. Not per se a CEO of the British Athletes Commission, but the loneliness of being a CEO in a very pressurised environment. So I took time off work. I was off for 30 days of the 112 million days lost to anxiety, stress and depression. I went back to work and I knew I was done, so I signed a settlement agreement with my board and left at the end of July. When I was on the floor, I thought I'd let not only my family down, but I thought I'd let 1,500 members of the BAC down. And I'd lost my identity, I'd lost my self-esteem, and I'd lost my confidence. I don't want that to happen to other people. So when I went back to work in July, I talked to any number of senior administrators in sport and coaches who wanted to know where I'd been, and I told them. And they said to me, Ian, I know three people like you, or I know exactly what you're saying, because I'm on 500 milligrams a day of something, or I'm on 6 pints a day because I'm struggling to cope. We just have so much work to do.
Thank you very much for speaking so openly and so candidly. And of course, you're absolutely right, and those people you spoke to are absolutely right, that this is actually a fairly widespread issue. So we know, for example, that every year one in four of us will suffer from some kind of mental health condition. We also know that we all have mental health and that we all exist on the spectrum, and most of us will move up and down that to various extents. We also know that we're getting close to a point where mental health, whether it's anxiety, depression, a combination of those or other conditions, is the biggest cause of workplace absence in this country. And it's remarkable to me that we're still playing catch up in terms of this.
I dealt with an athlete in 2013, probably. He was, is always able to call himself a Paralympian. He went to London. He went to London for major event experience. His time was going to be in Rio 2016. That was when he was going to hit his straps, be at his best. But he was bullied by his coach and his head coach. And when I picked him up, he was depressed and he was suicidal. And he came to me, and I rang the Child Protection and Sport Unit, and I said, I'm going to need some help here. And they said, how old is he? And I said, 23. We finish at 18. I then rang the EFDS, and I asked them if they had any templates or guidance on how to deal with athletes with disabilities. No, they didn't. And in fact, what they had done was refer them back to me. It took me 18 months to get a solution for this guy and to make him well. And what it exposed to me was the fact that sport did not have anything in place like the CPSU, the Child Protection and Sport Unit, to protect adults at risk. And it was only after persistent lobbying, and to give her great credit, the openness of Jenny Price at Sport England, that she opened up funding, which is now given to the Ancraft Trust, to develop a framework to protect adults at risk in sport. So I believe we were negligent, and I'm pleased that that is now being addressed.
And we, as you know, have joined with you in both some of those efforts in order to secure that funding, but also to work with that organisation since. And whilst it's great that that resource is available, I don't think it's any secret that we're actually talking about two people. So there is still a lot of work to do in terms of actually ensuring that those kind of support services can be available more widely.
Well, you know, you make an interesting point. One of the things that I used to talk about a lot when I was at the British Athletes Commission was what I used to refer to as tick box compliance. It looked like we were doing what we were required to do. And I don't know how effective, you know, some of these things that take place in the audits that are done in order to determine funding, is the work undertaken to complete the audit so that funding continues, or is it taken so that there is effective duty of care delivered in this particular regard? So yes, let's applaud the fact that there's people in the Ancraft Trust doing fantastic work. Nicola Dean is just brilliant. She's spread very thin. And Sport England's strategy is about inclusion. We have to create a framework in which people feel safe, dealt with as individuals, and confident to stay in the activity that they do.
I completely agree, and I suppose there are a number of angles to that, aren't there? There's the angle of people who are either within the system at some level, within the sports system, whether they're an elite athlete or an engaged participant. But there's also the point around using sport across society to help people to improve their mental health and well-being, whether that's someone who suffers from a diagnosed mental health condition, or whether that's like the majority of the population, just someone who would benefit from being physically active as often as they could be. The point about tick box culture as well is something that I think about quite a lot, and a lot of my day job is around governance, which I fear sometimes becomes a bit of a tick box kind of exercise. just wanted to reflect for a couple of moments on some of the work that we've done as an employer around mental health. And I think we ourselves used the charter and being one of the founders of it as a stimulus to reflect honestly on where we were as an employer, and also to engage our own staff in issues around mental health in the workplace. I think when we started, I don't feel we were in a bad place. I just don't think we were in a very conscious place around mental health. I think we had a reasonably supportive culture. I think we had reasonably good services available to people. And I think we had a fairly positive kind of atmosphere in and around the organisation. But I don't think we'd ever thought about it. One of the things we have done, along with a number of the over 315 signatories of the Charter, is to initiate an action plan here. And both people within my team and other teams in the organisation are responsible for driving that. It's led by the staff, it's not led by us as a senior management team or by the board. It's been, I think, an inclusive and successful exercise in getting us to think about the things that people want and would benefit them. And I think we've focused very hard on not making that a tick box exercise, but making that a genuine conversation, giving some space for kind of cultural change within the organisation.
Let's link tick box compliance with the charter, if I may. I was delighted and I was honoured to be one of the first signatories on behalf of the British Athletes Commission when the charter was first given. And DocuSport is a signatory to the charter, and I believe I'm doing my bit. I just wonder, though, how many of the organisations that have signed the charter have got action plans. I know there are great organisations like England Athletics who are doing so much across their management team and using their activity of running to help mental health, but I would suspect that they're in the vast minority. And I think some of that is about not knowing where to start, whereas in my view, just starting something and getting moving is significant, and clearly that's an area that DocuSport is interested in helping the sector with. I was also with you, James, at the Christmas all-parliamentary group discussion on mental health in sport, which was a crowded room. It was a lot of chat, and the MP who chaired the meeting, there was a plea that he said about we need evidence about the impact and the value of sport. And again, it's an area that I'm passionate about and I'm working on, so that I've been doing a pilot with a company called Moodbeam, where we've been gathering evidence of mental health in real time of administrators and coaches and athletes and ex-athletes and somebody who's visually impaired. And it's just brilliant because A, you're getting the evidence, but B, you're creating an environment in which you can have dialogue. So great that the charter exists, more work to do. Great that the Ancraft Trust is able to fund 1.5 people, more work to do. And all power to the Sport and Recreation Alliance for leading from the front with an action plan that I just genuinely hope is as effective as you say it is.
Yeah, and that's certainly my hope too. And as far as I can tell, because our staff are telling me and telling the rest of the senior management team, it is making a difference and it's creating a space where people can have these conversations. But we absolutely don't want to get complacent about it at all. And just like the charter for me in itself is just a piece of paper, so is the action plan. You know, and you need those pieces of paper, and they're useful mechanisms to hold people to account. But it's all about the actual impact and driving real cultural change. That's what we're interested in. That's what we're passionate about. It's easy to write 6 pledges on a page and sign up to it. Just in terms of the charter, I think you're right. There are probably 4 groups of signatories. There are the gold standard ones who are doing great stuff and talking about it. There are then the silver medalists, if you like, who are doing some quite good stuff but not really talking about it. There are then a group of perhaps the bronze medalists who are doing some good stuff, some stuff which isn't great. They could probably do a bit more and they probably need a bit of a nudge. And then there is a group who are not doing very much at all. We always wanted that to be the starting point of a conversation. We always wanted people to sign it and then go away and do things. My plea would be to people who are thinking that they want to do something, come and talk to us, talk to Ian, talk to Mind. There are lots of organisations out there who will help you and will signpost. We completely understand that this is a difficult area as well, and that this is an area where people are worried about doing the wrong thing, but we are here to help you with that. I'd like to move on, if I could, to talking about a couple of issues around the NHS and also community mental health services. First of all, I'm not pretending that around elite sport this has all been solved at all, but there are some good quality services that are available for people within the elite sport system, which are generally speaking not necessarily available to the rest of us as the general public. I think people's experience of taking the first step to go and talk to their doctor or talk to someone if they are having issues around their mental health is often then met with quite a long wait to be referred on to another service. Those services which exist in the community are under a huge amount of strain. My question to you is whether, as a sector, it is legitimate and right that we highlight that more. Is that our business to be talking about that, or should we simply be focusing on what we can do? So looking at our own system and getting our own house in order, encouraging people to be more active, making sure our offer's inclusive, or should we be talking more about the other side of the equation too, for those kind of treatment and management options where they are needed?
I don't see any of that as being mutually exclusive. We've talked extensively about sport putting its own house in order to improve its well-being. Now, the health sector perhaps has to recognise that people within sport can provide a preventative service. And I think sport has to recognise that people may want to do the activity for which they are, quotes, in charge. They may want to do it in a slightly different manner. And I've had that sort of subconscious bias challenged in me because I've been a sporty person, not particularly good, but I've been a sporty person and I've been in a sporting environment clearly in the last 14, 15 years. I'm interested in trying to help my local county sports partnership, and it's challenged my thinking. And I think the sector has to challenge its thinking too about how it delivers its activities and services in a way that people will want to come and, more importantly, stay and get that into their lifestyle.
Well, I completely agree with that, and something that I've got into trouble for saying before, but I'm going to say it again anyway, is that I think we sometimes lose sight of the fact that it's supposed to be fun as well. To get fitter, to get better at sport, does involve a degree of discomfort and doing things repetitively. When I was training for a marathon, I didn't enjoy every single 20-mile run, but I made myself do it. But on a general day-to-day basis, the main reason that I am involved in sport is that it's fun. Especially when we're thinking about children, I want it to be fun and engaging for them. And also I know that if we make it fun and engaging for them, they're more likely to do it and they're more likely to keep doing it. And I think if, to be honest, we just let kids play and have fun in a structured way rather than trying to get them all doing line-out practice, which I accept is a particular example, that we'd probably all be in a better position. Just in an effort to find something we might disagree on before we close, something that government talks about quite a lot, and I think something that you've talked about as well, Ian, in the past, is around establishing parity between mental and physical health. I'm not actually sure, personally, that that's a very helpful or a very realistic ambition. What do you think about that? I mean, first of all, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so is that what you think? And also, how kind of realistic is that as an ambition?
You know, I come at it from that experience I had in the British Athletes Commission, where it was all broad sweeping terms, but it was almost like all the athletes were a commodity, and if their ACL broke, we'd mend the ACL, just like a car. If your exhaust fell off, you go and get a new exhaust. But the sector recognised it had to do things differently. it was forced into doing that, I think, a little bit because of some of the incidents that I brought to everybody's attention, which were just traumatic. So it needed to get mental health on a par. I think people are, you know, they're off because they've got a cold or a flu or they've broken a leg, whatever. People aren't, you know, some people will say, I'm not coming in today because I've got this nasty little rash. Well, actually, what they have got is mental illness, but nobody's talking about it. So, you know, there's no stigma around physical health or ill health and getting it mended. There is about mental health. And if you look at it in broad society terms, if we can deal with the mental health and we can encourage activity, then the benefits are just exponential. And I think it's about the way that sport looks at mental health as well as physical health as a reflection of society as a whole.
Yeah, and I suppose my question was a bit clumsily worded because I'm not suggesting that there, I didn't want there to be parity between the two. I guess my reflection is more that I think, without meaning to sound negative, in reality we're a really long way from it. And I think just talking about parity without there always being a concrete plan for how you get there isn't always helpful.
I'll agree with that.
I guess the other thing just to close on is the relationship between physical health and mental health. And I'm a bit concerned by the way sometimes there's a suggestion that the two things are unrelated. In reality, of course, they're very closely related, partly because mental health is physical health. Your brain is part of your physical being. Also, the biggest cause of workplace absence amongst men of my age, the biggest killer of men in my age as well. It feels like we need to take it far more seriously than we actually do. So we're not saying we don't want parity. I think what I'm saying is I actually want it. I just don't want the phrase to just become repeated so often.
I agree. From a cure point of view, physical activity, trust me, is brilliant, particularly if it gets you out. I can remember looking at my watch at 8 o'clock in the morning and thinking, how the hell am I going to get to 8 o'clock tonight? And how am I going to fill my day, right? And just getting outside in the fresh air was making me feel better. Now, we shouldn't get to that stage where, unfortunately, I ended up, where I just was so poorly. Because if we get activity and getting out and walking Fred the dog and whoever else, then you are being preventative and therefore not going to be as at risk of having to rely on the health service with all of the pressures it's under and so on and so forth.
Just a final question, if I can, and I'm being unfair in a way because it's a hypothetical one that's difficult for you to answer. But you've talked there about using being active in the outdoors as part of the coping mechanism, treatment mechanism, self-treatment that you've successfully used, which is great. To an extent, do you think that's been reliant on having a family and network of friends around you? And also the fact that intrinsically you're someone who just loves sport and you've always done it, you've always been an active person. Would you have so quickly come to that conclusion that it was part of the solution for you had you not had that network and that background?
Well, I think I would always have done exercise. I reflect back and I think I was just absolutely shabby at whatever I was doing. But at least I was getting out. The thing that was important, I had some fantastic support from my family and some very valuable friends, but I thought that my family withdrew from me because I was ill. It was the other way around. I withdrew from them. So getting out and doing some activity, either on my own, but more importantly sometimes with them, just helped get me back on an even keel again. And, you know, I do know from first hand that doing activity made me get better, and doing activity now I am better, is part of my ongoing relapse prevention.
Thank you very much, Ian, and thank you from me in particular for being so candid. It really is important that we can talk about these issues in such an honest and mature way. The final thing I'd like to say before we sign off is that actually this stuff can seem pretty challenging sometimes, and sometimes we get to a place where it feels almost like these challenges are totally intractable. one thing that I'd say on a personal and professional basis is that this is something that we can do something about. We've heard Ian talk very eloquently and passionately about his own personal experience. This isn't too difficult a problem to solve. This is something that we absolutely can solve together. To people who haven't signed the Mental Health Charter yet, please do so. If you go to our website, you can sign up. It's very quick, it's very easy, and support will be made available to you once you've done that. But also to people who have signed already, I'd encourage you just to go away, perhaps dust off what you signed up to 6 months ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whenever it was. Reflect on how much progress you feel you've made. Also, reflect on some of the areas where perhaps you'd like to do more or you'd like some more guidance. And then when you've done that, get in touch with Ian, get in touch with us, and let's have a chat about what we can do together, because we really can make a difference in this hugely important area.